Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
So my name's Nigel Jones, and I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan. And you're joining me for today's podcast, where we're going to be talking with Tony Kilcoyne about ways that we could influence public perception into dentistry. So very welcome to you, Tony. Perhaps you could just introduce yourself and explain a bit about your background for those that don't know.
Sure. I'm Tony Kilcoyne. I work in my own dental practice in a little village called Haworth in West Yorkshire. Beautiful place, the steam trains still run there, cobblestone streets, and salt of the earth kind of people. I've been in practice now 30 years, so seen a lot, done a lot, and communicated with many colleagues in the ups and downs of dentistry generally over 3 decades. My practice started as an NHS squat, which for those young ones who don't know what a squat is, literally we opened the doors. It was a hairdresser's before I got it. We converted it to a dental practice, just opened the doors and crossed our fingers, and gradually more and more patients came, and by a year and a half we were running full time. At the same time, I was teaching part time at the Leeds Dental Institute. I got more interested in education and the academic side, so I did some further qualifications, more training, and eventually went down the specialist pathway. So now I'm a specialist in prosthodontics. My practice has gradually converted from NHS to mixed, to fully private, to then specialised, private, taking referrals, and now it's an education centre as well. So, you know, we've sort of achieved a lot in 30 years, but it has been in steps, and, you know, it's been a very interesting journey. My problem is, I just love dentistry, really.
Well, I think that becomes very clear when we listen to you on various medias, you know, whether it's on radio with Jeremy Vine, whether it's on the television. How did you get into all of that kind of arena?
Well, the media's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because so many times, I'm sure many dentists get frustrated where, you know, we hear a bad news dental story or something said about dentistry. And we're sat there thinking, hang on, there's 2 sides to this story, or the people need to know more information. And especially when you sat there and you think, you know what, somebody should call in and say something or do something. And then you realise, well, I suppose I am somebody, and if no one else is going to do it, why don't I? And so one day I just rang in. I said, well, actually, there's 2 sides to this story, and it's not always the dentist's fault. There are system problems, or there are public perception problems. And really, everybody wants things to be better in dentistry. And what was really interesting to me was, this came as a bit of a revelation to the media as well. They didn't really know what they didn't know. And suddenly they said, oh, can we get you to comment on more things? And so it became like an irregular thing. And then formally I became the Radio 2 resident dentist. And that was very interesting, where you're getting literally members of the public calling in with dental issues. And you're on the radio in a short time trying to give them some useful but obviously limited advice. But yet you could tell they were yearning for that. So the public were yearning for this information. The media outlets themselves were yearning for this information. And of course, then that's developed to TV interviews and so on. And I'm so pleased now to see many other dentists actually getting involved with the media and interacting more. And you realise, you know what, we're probably only touching 1% of what we could be doing, because the media and the public really do want to know and understand dentistry better. But there's nothing out there really helping or educating them.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. One of the areas that we picked up with the Practice Plan NHS Confidence Monitor related specifically to the public's understanding of the NHS. And I know that's a subject you're particularly passionate about. Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I'm actually now a totally private specialist referral practice. So you might think, well, how further removed from the NHS could you be? But I think a lot of us still care about the NHS, or certainly the idea of the NHS, because those letters stand for a national system that's health and prevention based and is a service free to all, regardless of income. And maybe when we think of the hospital services and so on, we think, well, yeah, that fits the NHS descriptor. When we think about dentistry, we think, whoa, hang on a minute. It isn't free for all. In fact, you may have to pay hundreds of pounds. Oh, hang on. There is a kind of service there, but it's a bit fragmented. It can't provide everything that's promised. And is it really prevention-based? Or is it only now kind of stuck in this wait till there's a fire before you put it out, rather than prevent the fires in the first place? And as regards nationally available, well, it is really variable. And in fact, in some areas, it's so bad, we even have third world charities like Dentaid providing basic toothache services because the NHS system cannot even provide that for the population in those areas. So really, N and H and S, maybe they don't belong in the same sentence as dentistry, the way it is promoted to the public as a fully comprehensive service for all clinical needs. Even on a basic analysis, it simply does not and cannot achieve that.
And how well do you think people understand that then, Tony?
I actually think the public understand the NHS service and what's really available to them very poorly. And very interestingly, even dental professionals still have a lot of misunderstandings about the system, because even 10 years after 2006, when UDAs were introduced to England, dentists are still asking questions. Can I do this? Can't I do that? What happens if the patient comes back in a certain time scale? What if this happens or that happens? What happens with the charges? Why are the BSA telling me three different bits of advice when I call up? There is still massive confusion. There's no clarity with the NHS dental service. So the answer is, I'm sorry, Nigel, I still don't think the majority understand it at all.
And do you think there's a reason why that ambiguity has been allowed to continue?
Well, I suppose it could suit some people's objective, shall we say, because it is very easy for politicians to say everything that everyone needs is available and is provided by the National Health Service. However, they're simply not providing the resources, the time, or the workforce to deliver that. It's not just a difficult mission, it's actually an impossible mission to deliver. So if that is the case, and really, how could they not know that centrally? Then maybe having confusion and obfuscation and many grey areas suits the purpose, if the purpose is not to have great clarity with the public and the dental profession at the same time. I really struggle to see what else it could be.
One of the things that's been occurring to me over the last few weeks is looking at all of the press coverage that came, or the media coverage that came with the furore about the seven-day NHS being impossible. And some of the interesting stats that came out of that, something like 3 years ago, 5% of NHS trusts were in financial deficit, now 80% are in financial deficit. The chief exec of NHS providers was on the Andrew Marr show talking about the need to ration, the need to sacrifice services, the need to actually close services down in some hospitals. How receptive do you think the government is now to having that kind of open and fairly tough discussion with the public?
Well, yes, it was a revelation, really, that, because for so long it feels like the government and the system have been stuck in denial. And now we had someone here who was, if you like, the chair of all the chief execs of the trust saying, look, guys, we can't cope. We cannot give everything for everyone. We don't have the resources or the workforce for a five-day service, because 80% are in the red now and we haven't even hit winter yet. So seven-day service is like a pipe dream. Let's get real. And in a way, that was very brave and pragmatic of them. And maybe this is the right time for dentistry to grasp that nettle and go large, go public with the big truth too about dentistry. It cannot be everything to everyone. It is a limited service. And in that respect then, shouldn't we really sit and plan how we can most effectively and efficiently deliver that limited service in the public interest? Because the ad hoc thing we've got now, where some areas manage, some don't, toothaches can't get seen, but maybe some regular patients can, well, that's not actually helping the nation as a whole. So like in dentistry, we've got to start with the diagnosis. And the diagnosis is It's a limited system, it's not fit for purpose, and it must change to become more patient-focused. And yes, that might mean it has to be limited. Okay, they don't like using the word rationed. They can call it focused or prioritised. But yes, it has to be limited and effective. And at the moment, it's neither of those. In fact, it's being relatively dishonest with the public and the dental profession by claiming that it's everything for everyone.
And how do you think the public would react to understanding just how limited the service is?
Well, I think 5 years ago, yes, there would have been a bit of an uproar because it's, well, hang on, the politicians promised us everything. The public aren't stupid. They see these headlines. They see the wider NHS struggling. And for a long time, they've noticed NHS dentistry's been limping along as the kind of Cinderella of the NHS, working extra hard, but really not being appreciated for its value in society. And now's actually a very good time for the public to receive this message, because of course they may not like it, but there's a bit more reality there. Although they don't understand the system or how this has come about, they understand if the main hospitals are struggling, well, of course we could see why dentistry would be struggling too. So if we're going to have a limited service, be it in medicine or dentistry, then let's do it well as a limited service.
So using language like a limited service, how likely do you think the prospect of a core service is?
Nobody likes the term core, but core just means limited. Mm. What's going to be in that core? Who are you going to prioritise? To me, just thinking out loud, if you or I injured ourselves on a Saturday night, maybe it was our fault, we were a bit careless, weren't looking where we were going, we fell, we hurt our knee, we were in pain. We can go to A&E and we have to wait around, it's a bit inconvenient. But that day, somebody's going to help us, somebody's going to get us out of pain, and someone's going to get us on the road to recovery. In dentistry, in my area, if you have toothache, you might have to wait 2 weeks in pain before even seeing anyone, or be asked to travel quite a large distance to another area. And if that's 2 or 3 bus rides, and maybe those buses don't always operate the times you need them to, and you've got childcare to consider and all the rest, that just disadvantages a certain population. So why don't we have a great dental A&E service? Nobody should be left in pain, whether it's their fault or not. Nobody's judgmental in medical A&E, so why do that for dental? So nobody should be in pain in a modern first world society, you know, for days or weeks. That is just ridiculous. And the second thing is, young children need to be prioritised because they are the future of the country. And actually, if you start young people on with a sweet tooth, not only can they get rotten teeth, but they can get rotten health through diabetes, obesity, and many other knock-on problems that might actually cost the NHS billions in extra resources. So thinking about prevention, those are two key areas. There will still be funding left for other things. And someone needs to sit down and plan. The diagnosis is the system's not fit for purpose. It can't do everything. So what do we want it to do? And how do we want it to do that?
So it sounds, Tony, as if you're saying that we're a little inhibited when it comes to talking about the fact that it is a limited or becoming by default a core service of sorts. How do you think dentists manage in their practices, in their day-to-day interactions with patients, with balancing the requirements of the contract and making sure patients are fully aware of all the options that are available to them?
Well, it's actually critically important to put the patient's best interests first. And despite system problems or your own practice problems or whatever it is, you know, we have to say to patients, this is the diagnosis, this is what I've found, and here are your options, A, B, C, whatever. And all of that might be provided on the NHS, but some of it might not. And it's important that the patient is presented with all the possible options, not for dentists individually to feel limited by the system in communicating all the options to patients. And in fact, if they don't do that, that does go against their professional ethics and guidance. So I appreciate for some dentists, they do struggle with this, but it's vitally important they do this. Even on the NHS, there's a form called the FP17DC, which you have to give for band 2, band 3 treatments. But on there is a category for, say, private options. And you know, patients deserve to know what is available. They can say no, they can say yes, they can say yes to some of it, they can say not now, but that doesn't mean not never, it could be later. The point is, you need to be able to demonstrate that the patient's been given all the options. And the patient actually appreciates that too. Even if they say no, they think, oh, well, they were good enough to tell me all these options. And so I think patients really don't like it if they go to another dentist and then they're told these other options and they think, well, why didn't my last dentist tell me this? So it's very important we're all consistent in giving all the options, whatever system we work in.
As someone that's worked in dentistry for 25, 26 years, I'm constantly amazed at what's possible and how patients' lives can be transformed. And then I also get slightly dismayed at the fact that so many patients aren't aware of how their lives could be transformed. What's your sense of public perception of what the capability of dentistry is in the 21st century?
Well, I think they sense certainly in medicine there's great advances, and it wouldn't be a great leap for dentists to almost start with that opening line of there's been some great advances in dentistry and we can do things like, and you can just list two or three things, perhaps some tooth whitening, which is very biologically friendly, perhaps some advanced bonding or slight cosmetic shaping of teeth to improve smiles. It doesn't always have to be the full oral rehabilitation. There are dental implants now that exist in dentistry and might actually cure that terribly loose denture, which maybe people have kind of given up on themselves, thinking, oh, there's nothing that can be done for me now. And it's our professional duty to say, there's been great advances in dentistry too. Again, even if they say no for themselves, they have that knowledge rather than have ignorance. And they can even tell other people, oh, my dentist said there was something about implants. Why don't you ask your dentist about that to a friend or a colleague? So it is important that we keep promoting to patients and the public the great advances that are made in dentistry and all the possibilities. Just because the NHS, for example, doesn't cover cosmetic work or implants or other advances sometimes in dentistry, that is no reason whatsoever to not let everybody know this is what's available in dentistry. And it raises the profile of dentistry generally. Why don't we do this more?
So it sounds as if an awful lot of what you've been saying, Tony, is that in order to change public perception or public understanding of the NHS or the wider benefits that dentistry has to offer, it's up to individual dentists to make the changes. Are there other measures that you would like to see taken that would help with the public understanding of what's possible?
I have to say, if I was given a diagnosis for our profession, it's that we haven't really promoted ourselves or our worth to society anything like we should do. So yes, that can happen at an individual level, but it should happen at a national level and through the public media as well. We want everybody like the BDA and all other organisations to say, look, dentistry has a lot to offer society. We contribute a lot to society's health. And now we're even realising that poor dental health can be related to poor medical health. And certainly gum disease linked with possible heart conditions or other things not going right in the rest of the body. You know, this is where we need to inform the public that coming to the dentist regularly and for prevention is about their general health as well as their dental health. But I have to say, I don't know, the majority of the public are relatively dentally ignorant about the benefits of dentistry and its value to society. And even when we prevent problems, there's a massive value in that. The worst value is neglect. So we shouldn't neglect informing the public at an individual patient level or at a national level what are the options, choices and benefits from modern dental care.
Well, thank you very much, Tony. It's been fascinating talking to you. And I'm left with a sort of sense of optimism that actually we're only scratching the surface in what we could do here. So if we do manage to all work together, there could be some really powerful changes that are brought to
Absolutely. Bear. I sense there is a sea of change coming now. And I think dentistry itself is ready to grasp the nettle, grasp this challenge, and actually go forward with it publicly and proactively.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed for your time, Tony.
You're welcome.